Blog Talk Radio.
923, I'll give you a corrected address, but you have a fire in a one story. Ordinary, looks like it's about 40 by 120, 125. Get your traffic control. Squad 5. Over to 273, 273.
All right. Welcome to another edition of Tailboard Talk. In just a few minutes here, what are we going to be talking about tonight, guys?
I think we got a potpourri topic.
Potpourri?
Yeah. Word of the day.
We'll have to look that one up. Urban Dictionary.
I feel that we're not providing the best service to our podcast listeners right now.
Why is that?
Well, I'm not sure if I'd want to be listening to this intro. I thought that'd be a tie and a teaser to what we're talking about tonight.
Part of the problem is our brains are all frozen up here because right now the current temp, I believe, is around 12 below, and it's supposed to drop around 24 below tonight. So,
yeah, those are the actual temperatures, not the wind chills tonight.
Yeah, the wind chills are down to 40, I believe, because the wind is supposed to pick up too.
Yeah, perfect.
So we're just trying to get by and survive right now here.
Yeah, so we're huddled down with beverages and snacks and parkas and caps and all that kind of good stuff.
It's minus 24 for the rest of the world that uses Celsius.
Yeah.
That doesn't make me feel better.
No, it doesn't.
This time of year is the only time I really appreciate the fact that we are not on the metric system.
We're getting cold enough that it's almost the same.
Yeah. What is it, around 35 below they get even?
About negative 40.
Okay.
Oh, all right.
We're not too far off from that.
We should talk about that tonight.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah, you think? Just look at me like, no. Okay.
Yeah, no.
All right. Well, when we come back, we've got a show for you guys.
I can't wait to see what it is.
Welcome to Tailboard Talk with Dane Carley, Craig Nelson, and Jeff Wallen. Every month we explore different topics of interest to you, our cohorts in fire and emergency services. So whether you sit back and listen, sound off on the message board, or call in live to be part of the conversation, we welcome you to join us in our mission to improve the fire service for those we serve and those we serve beside. Now coming to you live from the Great White North, this is Tailboard Talk on Fire Engineering Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome to Tailboard Talk for Friday, December 29th, 2017. I'm Jeff.
I'm Dane.
And I'm Craig.
Okay, so much for different. Now back to different. And we are live.
Yes, we are live.
It is a great white north today.
You can tell, yes, that we're a little out of practice on the live show.
Yeah, but that's okay. It could make it interesting.
It could.
It could.
Hopefully the technology is working. We don't end up with an hour and a half of dead airspace like has happened in the past.
It's not the dead airspace. It's the tangents. It's never dead air. There's lots of filling the air.
You know, there's been dead air space between my ears for an hour and a half in some shows. In the past, right?
Last 30 years.
All right.
Well, yeah, like we were talking about, it's cold up here.
Oh, crap.
It's been going to be colder.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be pushing 30 below in the last couple of days. And I also have seen, judging by the Facebook post, that most of the country's feeling the cold. So hopefully some we're kind of used to operating in. You forget some of the ins and outs over the summer, but I think some of the places getting cold weather maybe a little bit don't do it as often.
Yeah, you know, we sit and kind of laugh about it up here anyways, and we hear that, oh, yeah, poor New York, they've got temperatures down around 1 degree, and it's snowing, you know, and go, oh, yeah, that's pretty rough. I mean, but somebody's always got it worse. I'm sure somebody's got to have it worse than us, and there's some things in the summer that I don't know how I would deal with it. Other places just deal with it all on their own just fine. So,
and that's what's interesting to me is when I was at the fire academy here a couple months ago, we got into some of the discussions on kind of what your operating guidelines are for some of this, the weather stuff. You've got places that deal with hurricanes. We deal with blizzards and freezing temperatures. And so it got me thinking, for us, once it hits zero, we don't send trucks out unless it's an emergency, unless it's a call for service. And then you go down places that have hurricanes and big storms. Well, then they have wind limits too. So once the wind hits a certain amount, they're going, okay, now you stay in station unless it's a call for service or unless it's an emergency type operation. We do have a tornado guideline for us because we do get tornadoes up here, but we haven't really come up with a, well, the wind hits this, so you should, the point is you should stay in and be ready because you're going to be going on calls. There are going to be emergencies
and
happening.
Less chance for damage to your apparatus. I remember seeing a discussion on that recently on one of the discussion boards, and it was amazing the variation between wind speeds. I saw one, if I remember right, that was as low as 15 miles an hour. And I thought, holy cow, you know, it's always 15 miles an hour here, it seems like, at least. You know, some of them were 35, 45, which seems, you know, where you're starting to pick up some speed. Branches are starting to come down, power lines are starting to come down and stuff like that, those speeds. So, but yeah, it depends on where you are, what you deal with, and what you're used to, I guess. So,
straw pole, what seems like bad enough wind conditions that you're kind of worried about limbs down and stuff like that here. I don't know.
Power lines, stuff that would take a power line down, so you're going to be going on those calls.
Yeah, I'm thinking 40, 45 mile per hour gusts.
I would think so. We had, what, the other day, we had 55, 60 mile an hour gusts, well, almost a steady wind.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wasn't particularly busy. I mean, the infrastructure's gotten better where we don't see as many power lines down as we used to, except for the older part of town where it's still above ground. It happens, but I think, I don't know, I'd say 45 would be a fair number,
And I have to imagine there are other parts of the country where it's so, like, 30 would be okay. Well, 30 mile per hour gusts would be a windy day, but it's not abnormal.
Right? Kind of perspective. Yeah. Up here, we're used to very high winds, but they have over the last few years gotten even higher than what is typical for up here on the Great Plains here. We see 20, 30 mile an hour winds all the time. That's just pretty much the steady wind. If we wake up and it's something less than that, it's a calm day. It's weird.
And that's something I've noticed on YouTube and stuff, is a lot of people posting videos now of fires, and they're calling like a house fire or something. They're calling it a wind-driven fire. Like, well, hell, that's all we do is wind-driven fires. If that's the way you start classifying them. And it does make a difference. I mean, we do it second naturely.
Oh, you're making up words. Yeah. Pot pourri. That blows pot pourri out of the water. Pot pourri's already a word.
But, you know, where the fan goes, or how we vent the windows, or whether or not we get on the roof or not. Or, I mean, there's so many things that are automatic because it does blow up here so often. That a lot of places maybe don't have that. I mean, you were just talking earlier about down in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul. The wind there isn't nearly as much.
Thinking about too, that for us is with the cold weather, the other thing that we do is we don't wash trucks in the mornings when it's really cold. We typically wash our trucks every morning if they're dirty. If they're not, we don't have to, but usually they're dirty. And when it gets this cold, we don't wash them, because you pull out into this kind of weather on a truck that was just washed and your windows are all going to fog up and steam up right now.
Doors are frozen shut.
Yeah. And even with a warm engine, you can't defrost them fast enough.
Are you guys running dry pumps in the winter?
No.
No? Okay. That's kind of been, we have in the past years, typically when we get down below zero, then we'll be draining the pumps each morning.
Okay.
You can't drain them and keep them that way because you always have a little bit of trickling in.
Yeah.
But we had some trucks with rear mounted pumps, and we were more concerned about, are we going to have issues with some of the small lines for the gauges and stuff freezing, more in particular with those. So we've been running dry pumps for a few years now, and some do and some don't. And I can't find one strong trend to say, yes, this has been problematic, this is not. So.
We have, you know, our engines are built with heaters in the pump compartment, which helps a lot. But anytime, during the winter time, when a driver stops the apparatus, they put it in pump and run it up to about 750 to 1,000 RPM with the pumping gear just circulating water, so it doesn't freeze, and that helps keep our lines thawed also, because any thing that has water in it is flowing or moving at that point. So it's worked pretty well. But
it works pretty well, and it's one of those things where it takes a lot of training to get drivers good at doing that stuff, but then also recognizing that if they don't have water flowing and that pump's rolling, now you're going to have the opposite end of the spectrum on that. And so we've seen that at fires too, where they got the pump going like crazy and nobody's got water flowing, and now you got a hot pump because they think that they had water trickling out and
sure.
they didn't.
Dead airspace.
Yeah, we walked away from the table.
We had to do that for.
I drove over the track.
We had to do that for Jeff. Yeah. A little bit of dead airspace.
Yeah. Yes, I like to work with the dead airspace when we come up to that. And we're pre-recording the show. That's my break, so I know here's where to stop. Here's where to cut some pieces together. See if we can make it sound seamless and not awkward. You know, more try to keep the awkwardness going so that it seems to flow naturally from the talking to the
much
dead
more
airspace
realistic
back to the talking. Yeah, yeah, I tend to think so.
Well, I was. That's the other thing, is that the cold weather itself wreaks havoc. I was at a fire, I was pumping one time, and it was a fairly large fire. And weather very similar to this. And with the multiple lines that I had off, after a little while, the gauges ended up doing different things. And so one of the gauges froze at the pressure it was set at, and so it wouldn't change. Another one of the gauges spiked full. And it wasn't running full, it just spiked. And another one of the gauges went to zero. And we were flowing water that whole time.
Yeah.
And then we got back, and the mechanics had to replace all the gauges after that.
Right.
I mean, so it's crazy what that cold weather can do, how hard it is on some of
that. I'm assuming you still had the main gauge, because it typically will have a bigger diameter.
Yeah, it was the individual line.
Yep.
And so really it was kind of thumbs up and thumbs down. We ended up
run the throttle up till feet come off the ground and back off
so
a little.
You're looking at guys that thumbs up, thumbs down. We started interior and got pushed out, and so then with the defensive lines it was easier to see people and you want more or less. And then I would just adjust a little bit accordingly.
Yeah. That's where you'd like to have that really good pump operator that knows intuitively how to do stuff, because you can go through the calculations, but there's a difference between the pump operator that's really good at what they're doing and has got enough experience that they've run things, and whether they got the gauges or not, they can set that incident up for you.
Well, it's kind of like a new driver with the manual transmission. The new driver's watching the tachometer to figure out when to shift.
I'm pretty sure the look on my face when I was looking at those gauges would not instill any confidence. It's kind of with a head scratch, like, that one's full on, huh? And you kind of look down the line like you're waiting to see somebody flying around on the line. And that one's zero, so you're looking for somebody sitting on a deadline. And it wasn't happening. So it's that kind of the situational awareness stuff we talk about where it wasn't making sense.
Yep.
So it took me a few minutes, again, because you're looking at the gauges and you're looking at the line. And then you start playing with it a little bit, and then, it is not moving. It's not changing.
During that fire, were you ever worried about having a Christmas Story moment where maybe your fingers would get frozen to your helmet because they were up there on your head?
You know what? There was another fire I was running the pump at, and I had the gauges freeze too. But the thing that was interesting about this that you just made me think of was I was standing underneath the ladder truck, and so the ladder was spraying water, and that mist was coming down on top of me the whole time. Well, it actually worked out perfect because the mist wouldn't soak through my turnout. It froze on the outside of my turnout coat, which is an awesome insulator. You know, if you can get the outside of your turnout coat frozen without the inside wet, you're good to go.
Yeah.
So this was perfect, but I was running the pump, so my hands were at shoulder level the whole time, pulling levers and whatever. And I had a headphone. I had a headset on so I could hear the radio traffic, and my relief came up. Sly comes up and Sly says, "Hey, I'm here to take over for you." I'm like, "All right." He said, "Well, what pump pressure is he pumping?" I said, "Don't worry about it. The gauge just froze like 2 hours ago." I said, "Just leave it where it is, and you should be okay." I said, "Let me get you the headphone." So I go take the headset off, and my hands wouldn't reach my headset because the ice was so thick that my shoulders and elbows wouldn't bend to pull them off. So I'm like, "Hey, Sly, you want to take the headset off?" He goes, "No, you lazy bum. Do it yourself." I'm like, "I can't. I can't lift my hands above my shoulders because I've been running the pump. And I'm frozen." And he started laughing, of course, took the headphones off. But, you know, it reminded me, though, that ice layer, the biggest mistake I made that night was I went into a warm spot and let that ice thaw out and soak into my turnouts. So now I'm wet.
And then when you came back out, you froze again, but you froze all the way through,
yep.
And then you were done. You were useful.
Oh, I was. Yeah, I was no good at all.
Couldn't do a thing.
You know? And that was, so, you know, if you get frozen on the outside, don't go into somewhere warm and thaw out. That's the worst thing you can do.
Yeah, we've kind of had, you know, when you go to the apartment buildings and there's a fire alarm call, you know, and everybody's just kind of huddled in the entryway and, you know, everybody's supposed to go outside, you know, 15 years ago, get outside. You guys got to be outside now. What are we doing this for? There's obviously no fire. So, you know, everybody stays there. But we've had those fire calls when it's cold like this too, that when they're done with the initial knockdown, they're not rehabbing outside. They're still rehabbing inside the fire structure. They're hopping out enough to get another bottle on, and then they're going back in and staying in there so that they don't, if they're already thawed out, they don't come out and freeze.
Yep.
Because then, you know, once you thaw again, they're done. So they're going to stay inside. And if they're outside, going to stay inside. Sometimes they'll cycle through more bottles because you can't be going in and out once you make that cycle after you've frozen, you're wet and you're done.
Yeah, it really, I mean, it's amazing how fast and how cold you get after that happens.
Yeah.
And that's also the cold fire I was thinking of is one of the examples that we've used too with the command structure working well because it forced everybody into the same vehicle. Into a
all
command
the,
vehicle.
Yeah,
they,
all
they
the ended partnering up, agencies.
There. Yes, getting a command vehicle there. So we had the ambulance service, the fire, the police, everybody in one vehicle, and the incident was run very smoothly. And coincidentally, with that incident, that even involved the public works, too.
Yeah,
had to end up running plows and graders constantly that whole time over those whatever four-hour period.
Yeah, because everything was freezing.
Because everything was freezing onto a main road, or it would have frozen onto a main road if they didn't just keep scooping it off.
Away,
yep, exactly. Yeah, I can't imagine if you get a layer of ice like that down on the road, you're kind of done.
Well, that's what happened that one fire I was telling you about. We ended up having the engine froze in place. We had to have the public works come out of the tractor and help kind of push it off. But there was it was over the tops of the rubber into the wheel. So, you know, what is that? 8 inches of ice probably on the road. I don't think, I would be surprised if that ever went away till spring came, just because you can only salt it so much. It's only going to do so much good. Yeah, there was a block of road that was probably covered in 8 inches of ice. But,
sure, just close down both ends, put up some boards and play hockey, eh?
Yeah, you bet. Yeah.
The other thing with the
kids are happy.
The cold that we have today, it gets to these temperatures, and they can't do anything with the roads other than plow them because the salt and sand, or the salt and the stuff that they put on them, it's so cold it can't melt it. And so it actually then ends up making it a nice slippery sheen. So then it has the opposite effect.
I think that newer stuff goes down to about zero now, and then it kind of quits working. And the older, the regular salt was down to
regular salt 25, I think.
Okay, so, I mean the new stuff's good. Because you can do a lot more when it's this cold. It's weird to be out, it's 15 degrees out, and the roads are slushy because of the treatment that's
crazy,
down there melting off.
You know, one of the other simple things, and coming from California, I had to learn all this stuff fresh. I mean, it just wasn't something we dealt with. And one of the simple things I never probably would have thought of on my own, because I have a lot of dead air space myself, is leaving the hose running so it doesn't freeze.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be running fast, but that's another problem then, is because you don't want to leave the nozzle running inside of the house. So you always got to remember to take it out and leave it cracked so you don't cause more water damage. And
then you got to be smart enough to think about, well, now where's the runoff from this trickle that you got going out the hose going to go? So don't just set it in the entryway, you know, off the entryway so that it's trickling right back down past the hose, but get it out into the yard somewhere where it's going to create the ice away from where you're going
to
walk.
I saw one of the funniest things speaking of that. The guy that happened to probably wouldn't think it was too funny, but the hose had been set up out front door of this apartment building, and the water was running. It was left on so it wouldn't freeze, and it collected over the sidewalk. This guy came in later, and he didn't know that the sidewalk had a big dip right there. So the water collected there, and then a little bit of ice formed over the top, and I think even a little snow might have fallen on top of it.
Perfect.
I remember right. And he's walking out of there. I was walking out of the building, all of a sudden, bam, he's about waist deep, right through the ice, about waist deep in this water. Like, what the heck just happened? But so you got to think about where's that water going when you leave it running? Because now there's a guy that's out of service because you can't work like that.
Well, we've had so many of those slippery ice injuries that now we have the, what do you call them, the slip-on metal cleats that they can slip over their boots. And it's kind of interesting. Like everything with the evolution of time, at first it's like you look at it, that's kind of silly, and then then you slip and fall a few times, and then you start wearing them. We're kind of that point where everybody's used to wearing them now. We just keep them on the trucks, and hey, if it's cold and slippery out, they just slip them on their boots, and they're good to go. It's interesting because I see a lot of our personnel wearing them a lot of the time now,
right?
Where it wasn't that long ago, we had them, but you didn't see them.
You get over the pride a little bit and realize that this is actually an effective tool.
Yeah. Yep.
Our first pair of leather boots that we'd ever gotten in our department, we went from rubber to leather boots. You know, we thought, kings of the world, gosh, these things are so comfortable. These things are so great. It was a really hard rubber sole on the bottom of them. And so then when winter came, they were horrible. You were slipping all over the place. And we got through one winter with them, but the next year we started slowly replacing them all out. But I think that whole next year we replaced them all because we were having injuries from people slipping all over the place. You couldn't walk on anything with these things because they were like skates. Just crazy.
Now standing there with a hose line in your hand and sliding backwards, you got three people one person in place so they can run a line. I've seen that happen at a couple house fires.
Yeah.
One, I remember one, the whole sidewalk and front step was all ice and firefighters sitting at the door, and I see another guy pushing on his back. God, let him work at his own pace. He'll go in when he can, you know. And then I realized after I saw the guy holding them, his attention got distracted or something. I forget exactly what happened, but he looked away. All of a sudden, the nozzle guy goes slides right off the front step and into the snow. And then I was like, oh, that's what's going on. So, you know, some little simple things that you get used to doing, but you don't think about all the time. And we got ice up here. Seems like 6 months out of the year, some ice around. It's not quite that bad, but it sure seems like it.
Yeah, this is one of those awkward pauses we were talking about.
like we should transition. I was just going to jump in, but you wanted an awkward pause. So.
All right. There it is. That was nice. Thank you. Thank you. What were you going to jump in with?
I don't remember now. He threw me off.
You know, this is my first time over to your place, Craig. We're recording in the Craig studios today.
Yes.
And after I got over here in the maps, Google wants me to rate, how was my drive over to your place?
I bet it was pretty good, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Took you right here?
Yeah, it took me right here. It was great.
From where I live, it's kind of surprising. There's pretty good directions to it.
There is.
Yeah. Yeah. You're getting occasional questions about routes and roads to help others find their way. Oh, so for all the people that are coming over to your house, they want to know, is this a good route?
I thought they're already here. Nobody else is coming.
It's as good as it gets, huh?
I don't have enough beer for any more people.
Oh, you know, it's getting cold. You didn't stock up ahead of time?
Well, there's always the emergency stash.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I'm talking about that. There's a radio station down in Twin Cities that talks about inventory management. And we got adequate inventory management. Up until just recently, Minnesota liquor stores were closed on Sunday.
Yes.
So you had to make sure that you made your run on Saturday so you were good for the weekend.
Before 10.
Yep, before 10 o'clock.
Yep.
Unless you live in Moorhead, you could say, oh, gosh, if I got desperate, I could cross the river over to Fargo. The liquor stores are only open until, is it 2 o'clock there or is it 1 o'clock? They used to be open as late as the bars were open, but that was before it went from 1 a.m. to 2 a.m. I don't know.
You could buy on Sunday, too.
That's a shameful journey when you say, oh, I'm so desperate, I'm going to drive another 10 minutes to go across the river to Fargo to find a liquor store. Because I'm obviously that dependent that
mm-hmm. Sometimes.
I need to go into another state to make this happen.
Should we take a little break?
Sure.
Next topic.
All right. We can do that if you know how to do the break thing.
I'm going to play, since we're at Craig's, at an undisclosed location.
Oh, okay. And then we'll be back after that.
We'll be right back.
All right.
Broadcasting from an undisclosed location, for obvious reasons, this is Tailboard Talk on Fire Engineering Talk Radio.
Oh, we're back. Hi. Welcome back to Tailboard Talk.
Yeah, welcome back. Craig seems to think this one's going to go viral.
Yeah. I was thinking we should thank all the listeners for making this one go viral.
Yeah.
We haven't asked for live call-ins in a long time.
We haven't. I wonder if the phone lines have been...
Oh, we don't even have anything set up like
been
that.
Been buzzing and we didn't even
have
realize
no
it.
No idea.
Yeah. We'll keep an eye for all of our listeners out there.
What we need is... somebody from the south to call and tell us about their warm weather operations that are the opposite of our cold weather. Where we go inside for the winter, they do that in the summer.
The air conditioning and shade.
Yeah, true.
Spent a little time in Phoenix, and that's about what it was like. It was here, you're inside for 6 months of the winter, and there you're inside for 6 months of the summer.
Yeah. My brother-in-law lives down there, and that's about nailed it. Yeah. Too hot. Start roofing at 3 o'clock in the morning so that you can get done before it's too hot out.
I was just going to say, you know, I've seen the landscapers out there, and I don't know what time they get started, but well before when I was up, because, I mean, you got to be done by 9 or 10. Well, I saw, but, yeah, I guess every place has got their challenges.
Yeah. Yeah. So the other thing, you know, we were going to talk about that we kind of kicked around a little bit was I've seen Richard Branson published a new book recently, and I haven't read it, but it seems to have caused a lot of his finer points to be talked about on LinkedIn and Facebook and stuff like that. And one of them that I thought was interesting, one of the articles I read was that his philosophy is to treat your employees well, because if you treat your employees well, you're going to take care of the customers. Now, obviously, the fire service isn't a business, but I think there's a lot of value in the concept that if you treat your firefighters well, they're going to take care of the people that they interact with every day. They're going to make sure the image they're portraying of the department is professional, is caring, is empathetic, whatever it is that is needed at that time. And sometimes, you know, I was trying to figure in my mind, well, how do you equate that, the business world, to the fire service world? You know, how do you go about treating your firefighters well so that that's their thing? You know, the fire service is said to be a paramilitary organization, and sometimes we get wrapped up into the hierarchy. We've written about that before, how sometimes the hierarchy is an important part of what we do. And it is, don't get me wrong, you know, especially on the fire ground, you've got to have that span of control so you have the accountability and your firefighter safety and all that. But outside of the fire ground, and even on the fire ground, what are the things we can do, you know, to show the firefighters that we're taking care of them?
I think that's one of the big challenges we'll be facing in the future with the fire service, especially you look at today's political atmosphere, and in a lot of cases, tax dollars are shrinking in ways, and we're having to, which is good that we're defending, we can defend what we're doing, but it's getting tougher and tougher to get raises, and we are being not private. We can't just give bonuses. We don't have stock options. And so a lot of the traditional things that private business can do to make employees happier, or to make a job more attractive or retain their employees, we can't do. And so I think we have to get a little bit more creative. And I know one of the things that we looked at and adjusted recently was just the living restrictions. We used to have living restrictions, and you start looking at it and you go, well, none of the other city departments have these living restrictions. Why are we holding our people to a standard that nobody else is held to? And that doesn't mean that there wasn't some merit for it. But looking at it and loosening it a little bit is going to help us retain people, because we're also running into where the fire service employee was the main breadwinner years ago. Now we're running into a lot of spouses that make more money, and so they're more likely to follow spouses.
Insurance benefits are there.
Yeah, and so if they were going to move 60 miles away for a job, and we don't let them live 60 miles away, they have to leave. And so that's one of those things where, well, maybe we can still keep that employee even if they have to move a little ways away rather than them have to quit. And it's just one of those little things that we can do. But I think that is a big key for us in the future is what do we do to make the job attractive for our employees and keep them happy? Because we'll increasingly deal with more burnout. Our call volume in most places is going up, continues to go up, and it'll continue to go up. And you look at PTSD and the stuff we see and deal with, and that has an increasing impact on your employees. And so keeping them happy, especially for us where we're so heavily service driven, I think is extremely important.
I think, you know, we are a service industry, so to speak. It's about taking care of the community, the people in the community. And I think if the firefighters feel supported by the department, they're going to be a lot less likely to have a bad day. You know, one of those interactions with the public where they finally just kind of lose it on, like we were talking about earlier, you know, firefighters are actually really considering the gamut of people that they interact with every day. We really are having a good group of people because we don't have problems. But there are the occasional times where somebody just gets so frustrated that they do or say something they shouldn't. And I think those would be reduced considerably, or are reduced considerably, when they feel like the department supports their wants and needs as much as they can. You know, I mean, it's not like we're giving away the farm. We're not going to, there's no way we can as a public agency give somebody everything that they want, but we sure should look at what we can. Like living restrictions, for example, is a good example. How easy is that just to loosen that up a little bit?
In a lot of cases, when you look at the studies, pay is important, and people have to be able to make a living where they near where they work, preferably. But that's not always the number one or one of the top motivators. And so that does open the door to us a little bit if we can get creative with what are some ideas and ways to do that. And I'll put in my little plug for FDIC here is that's one of the things that our folks have told me and continue to talk about is that they appreciate those opportunities to get out and meet with other fire service professionals and take classes and learn and grow and develop. And it rejuvenates them and recharges them on the fire service. And it does the same to me. Every time I go there, I come back and I'm excited to be in the fire service. And I'm excited about what I do. Because over the year or over the years, you can start to get worn down, especially when if you're working at a high volume station or you're on a high volume truck or engine or company, you can start to feel a little beat down. And so what are the things that we can do to make that job better? And that's what I would love to hear more ideas about. What can we do to make the job better? And those are a couple of them I know that right off the bat, we had some guys that brought that to us, the living restriction one. And so, the chief did relax that some. And then the other one, like I said, is the FDIC. Getting out to these national, international conferences and meeting with other people in the fire service, having a good time, learning some new skills is very rewarding also.
Well, I think that fits if you look Herzberg's two-factor theory, it's called, and it talks about what motivates people, employees specifically, but pay is a temporary motivator. If I give you a raise tomorrow and you're going to want another raise next year, you're going to want another raise the year after that, that's just the nature of it because of inflation. And it also just, you start to get used to that raise. It just doesn't feel like much anymore. So they don't, you know, he didn't consider a motivator. It's as long as you have enough that the employee feels secure, that's really all you can do. And everybody's idea of secure is a little bit different, so that's where you get into this problem with that. But to keep it simple, the other piece of it is what motivates people is, like you said, the training. And especially with today's younger generations, they want to see their employer, the fire departments, invest in their education and training, their continuing education and training. That's a big part of it. That's important to them. So the FDIC trip is important, even just regional schools. You know, most states have regional schools that the college system or somebody puts on that they can go to. And you do see there's a lot of people that put in for those, that put in requests to attend training, hoping the fire department will support the trip. And there is occasions when the department can't for whatever reason, staffing or something outside of their control, but it is pretty, they're disappointed when they don't get those training requests approved. And so it does make it, even something simple as that makes a big difference.
It is amazing how disappointed they are when they aren't approved. And it's also amazing when they come back, how excited they are.
Mm-hmm.
That we talk about that pride. They have that pride that, just like you said, they want, our firefighters today are phenomenal. They are great. They're hardworking. And they have a lot of pride. They want to do well. They want to provide a high level of service. They want to have a high level of skills. And in the many specialty areas that we've grown into as a fire service. And so when they get those opportunities, they get so excited and they come back and they can share with the department. And that's because that's one of the things too, that, well, it's expensive to send somebody there. Yeah, it is. But when you look at what they can bring back and share with the whole department, now it starts making it a lot more worthwhile.
And here's another motivating factor is once they return from that training, what are they able to do with that? Mm-hmm. Is the organization receptive to implementing some of the ideas that are brought back? Is the organization willing to allow those individuals to invest some time and resources in developing those skills amongst the other members of the department, or determining what's the right fit in the department and being able to try to carry that forward? So another motivator, you know, as long as you've got enough money so it's not a detractor, is do you have the confidence of the organization? Are you empowered to help drive where the organization goes? So something that's counterintuitive is asking more of your firefighters, asking for a greater commitment, greater involvement in special tasks or projects or a subject matter area. It might feel as if you're asking them to do more work and you're not paying them anymore to do that. They could just be a firefighter and respond to calls and go to the training drills and what have you. But if they have a specialized niche or if they have an area where they can impact policy and training and try to drive the organization, it's more motivating for them. They feel as if they are vested with the organization. They tend to perform higher that in that area as well as higher in other areas if they feel like they have some say in where the organization is going and they've got the trust and the backing of the department to help them develop into future leaders and so forth. So, and I think a lot of us miss the boat on that. And there's not a good playbook to go by necessarily about how to make that happen. But you can see that the more you demand of the firefighters, the more they step up to it, the happier, more satisfied they tend to be, and then the more they want to perform. And it gets to be more and more of a self-fulfilling prophecy by doing that, that you're getting more and more and more for that same salary. But they are happier to be doing that because they feel like their time is being spent well and their talents are being appreciated and utilized. So
Right. That's
one of those motivating factors. Am I appreciated? Are my talents being utilized? Am I being developed to maybe do more than I thought I could do?
Right.
Yeah.
And to give them those opportunities. As you said, just to give them that opportunity to step up and do that. And the nice thing with that is that's kind of it's an ongoing kind of type of action where you look at some of these, even our loosening living restrictions, it has a positive impact on us now, but as you hire new personnel, that's all they know.
Right.
So some of these changes, just like the pay can be a short term. Some of these issues, they go away. And so I think about even like our uniform policies have been relaxed over the years too. And the people we hire now, they don't know any different.
Right.
They don't appreciate, well, you know, we used to have to wear the cap and the tie and the all the time. And we used to, so you lose some of that as time goes on, you make an improvement and then you lose some of the oomph with it. And so when you look at, or we look at trying to improve the fire service for our employees and keep them happy, the ones that are continuous, like the training one, are very nice because they keep going.
Right.
You send another person or you send several more people each year, they come back and bring back and they're rejuvenated and they help rejuvenate the ones that didn't get to go that maybe you'll get to go in the future.
Yeah.
And it's hard as leaders not to fall into the trap of once you've empowered somebody once on one issue, or once you've gotten a training level set amongst your staff on a special initiative, that you forget that there's a maintenance component to that where you've got to continue to support that level of training or support that employee who's had that special initiative and they've accomplished something. That's great, but what's the next thing? What have you done for me lately? Or what am I doing now? Tend to think, great, they're good to go. They're flying on their own. They've got some empowerment. They've got some motivation. Great. I can look for the next person who needs something, but that person still needs the continued support and development, and it's just easy for us to say, great, that problem is solved, let's move on to the next one, and you can lose them and they start crashing back down again without having that continuous support. And I was going to say until they've got some rank behind them to carry them, but even then, you know, how much of the job really is personnel related in trying to keep employees happy or motivated or moving forward in the organization in a positive way? And it's so much easier for us to, even as leaders and supervisors, want to deal with an issue or a thing or a broken piece of equipment and just get it solved and move on to the next thing. And it's very hard for us to keep working with that workforce factor to keep people motivated and energized and engaged and developing.
It's very difficult, and that's where we can easily slip into our I'm doing air quotes right now, fixes. And Dane and I have written and talked about that before too, is we do our quick black and white fixes that we think, oh, that's just going to, that fixed it. You didn't have somebody that wore a seatbelt and they got in an accident, somebody got hurt or whatever the case is. So we make a rule, you got to wear a seatbelt. That's the way we fix it. Or somebody backs into the station and hits a pole, and now you make that, whatever the person's name is, that rule. Mm-hmm. And you make another rule, you can't do that. That doesn't solve the problem truly, but that's the quick fix that's so tempting and so easy to slide into. A lot of this stuff is much more in depth. And when you get people involved in the process, so like you were talking about, Jeff, with getting them, what are they bringing back? And looking at what new equipment did you see there? What new procedures? And you ask them to develop a class and put a proposal together on some of that stuff. Then they also start to learn the process that you have to go through to institute new techniques and new equipment. And I'm guilty of it. I know when I was a firefighter, I thought, well, it's just as simple as that's a cool piece of equipment, let's get it. Well, you find out as you get older, it's not quite that simple. And there's finance processes through whatever your organization or whoever oversees you. And that's one of those things that's sometimes in, I'm not going to say constant flux, but I know with the city of Fargo, it has been changing over the last few years, and they're getting more restrictive because they're getting better at tracking things. And so they're very specific about their processes. And so part of that is teaching our firefighters that, okay, you've found a nice piece of equipment. Now we got to look at all the angles of it. What are the positives? What are the negatives? How does it benefit us? How might it not benefit us? And then if we're going to put this on a truck, we also have to go through all of our policies and SOGs and make sure it doesn't conflict and make sure that those don't need to be rewritten. And so you teach them that process, and now they have a greater understanding for it because, again, we're firefighters, so we think everything needs to be done now. And so now they start to learn appreciation and a little bit of the patience that goes with the process of making positive changes too, because making changes does not happen quickly. Mm-hmm. And I don't care if you're in government or private industry, it does not happen quickly. There's a process for it, and there are reasons for that process. And if we can teach them that, then they'll maybe learn a little bit of patience with it, because firefighters are trained from day one to do everything right now. And so it's not intuitive to us. It's not intuitive to me. I'm not a patient person. I'm sorry. That's not one of the God's gifts that was given to me is patience. And so I've had to learn that and learn to understand the process that just because something's not happening as quickly as we'd want, doesn't mean it's wrong or bad or it's not going to happen, especially at home. I mean, I come home and I expect my wife wants to just vent, and I got to try and fix everything right now for her. And that's not what she wants, trust me. So it's learning that process and the patience that goes along to make these things happen.
You haven't tried just throwing money at your wife?
No, I don't have any to throw at her. If I did, I would. I'm open to anything.
Try something different.
Yeah, that's what I've got as far as motivating employees.
I think it's interesting. I mean, things are a lot in the fire service, but I think there's a little bit of holdover, I guess you could call it, where we think we can tell firefighters, under the assumption that firefighters know they have a good job, firefighters don't want to leave, firefighters want the health benefits, we have this assumption that we can tell them to do a good job. We can tell them to go out and take care of the public. We can tell them to go do this. But it's kind of like Craig said, you can tell someone to put their seatbelt on all day long. That doesn't mean they're going to do it unless they want to put their seatbelt on. However it is, if you want someone to wear their seatbelt, you have to make them want to wear it. You know, they want to have to do it. And it's the same way with taking care of your firefighters, so that they want to take care of the public. You can't tell them to go take care of the public. Yes, they'll follow the rules, but they aren't going to go above and beyond. They aren't going to go out of their way. They're not going to do anything extra or anything special. And I think the fire service got a lot better about that. But I think some of that traditional paramilitary hierarchy piece that, well, if I'm the captain and I tell them to go do this, then they're going to go do it the way I want them to. Well, no, they're going to do If you're telling them to do everything and that's it, they're going to do exactly what they have to and no more.
Well, they have to know the why and the how. And I think that's on the cover of a really good book.
It might be. I want to call it a really good book. It's on the outlet.
Everybody should go buy.
Not too late for post-holiday gift either, by the way.
Gift card you want to spend.
Nothing says Happy New Year like a good book.
It says no time for playing cards. That was a really, how'd you throw that in there?
The why and the how.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and that's, we're talking about how do you make the job better. Like Jeff said, that's all I got. Well, that's my point is we all, because that's all I got too. Yeah. We need to think about it because as we're having the conversation, I'm going, yeah, I happen to be on the clothing committee. And I know that's one of the things that, as silly as it sounds, that our folks do get kind of, I'm not going to say excited, and that's maybe going too far, but they like having new uniform options and clothing options, whether it being something more comfortable or something that looks nicer, or just updating what we have logo-wise or style-wise, that kind of stuff. It's interesting that it is a small motivator, but like I said, it's cyclical in that, okay, we hire new people and that's what all they know is the new stuff we have. Mm-hmm. They don't know the old stuff we used to wear and how the improvements were made. So we have to get creative and we have to think about these categories. So we talked about loosening living restrictions and we talked about training opportunities and we talked about clothing. What are the other things out there that we can do? And as we look and we do our strategic planning in the fire service, we look out 5, 10, 15 years. I know for myself, a lot of times I focus on the services we provide and how we're providing the services. And I think a part of that should include how do we make that job better for our personnel mm-hmm. too? Because that's going to be a key to the future, especially if budgets are tight and we have a tough time getting raises. It's going to make it harder to attract employees. And even how do we attract and recruit? I know that's one of the things I've done a little bit of reading on too. And you look at private industry, and this is one of those where we don't have quite that flexibility, but in some businesses, a CEO meets a person off the street and that person has that spark and they have that personality and they will offer them a job on the spot or they will start looking for a position to put them in, but they might not even have a position for them. They just know. And that to me is a Branson type of deal where Richard Branson meets somebody and goes, that's the kind of person I want working for me. I will hire you right now and pay you, and I will find a job for you because I know you're going to make my business better and stronger. Now, we can't quite do that, but we have to, I think
but
outside
you know
the box.
We have started trying to promote people, hire people who have a positive outlook and promote people. I mean, we're using a lot more psychological evaluations and assessments in our hiring processes mm-hmm. and in our promotion processes, and I think that's an important. It's very similar to what you're saying. Yeah, we can't go pick that person off the street that has that spark that you're talking about, but we can make sure that of the pool of people that we're hiring from, that those people have that spark.
We're limited by certain things, but that we shouldn't let that limit. Then we need to figure out, well, how can we do that? I know one of the other things that I've read about is one of the best ways to attract people, especially to a job like the fire service, is through your current workers. Because if they know somebody that they think would fit well, there's a good chance they will, because your employee understands the work schedule, the demands, mm-hmm. the stresses, the skills, all that stuff. And so they actually end up being a very good source. And that's one of the things that we have in Fargo have been doing recently is when we have a new hire process coming up, our assistant chief has sent out an email to the entire department. Hey, we're going to be hiring new personnel in the next few months, taking applications. This is the time period. Please, if there's anybody you know of that you think would be a good fit for this organization, please forward this information to them and encourage them to apply. It's those things. So again, we have some limits, but if we think outside the box, we still can be creative and attract good people, and then carrying that on once they are hired, how do we keep them here? How do we make the job good and keep them happy?
Yeah, and I think we do a very poor job of promoting our own organizations, and we've been touching on that. Like you've said, the newer folks that are coming on don't know where we've been and how we've gotten to where we're at right now. And we also don't tend to try to let our employees know how good we think this job is or what all the benefits are of the job. And And we can tell them, hey, this is a great job. Your work schedule is great. And may go in one ear out the other, but people do respond to actual analysis about, well, what is it that makes this job unique from other jobs? What are the pros and cons of this job? Because there are things that are great about our jobs and there are things that kind of suck about our jobs. And the schedule is one of those things that fits squarely along both of those things.
Yeah.
It is great and it sucks at the same time for various reasons, but we often aren't there discussing what's good and bad about our job with our folks, just to try to keep ourselves in check or to keep our members just kind of with a clear perspective about what we have as an organization and what makes us both good and bad, challenging and rewarding for us.
And I've always thought, I know a lot of departments when they hire somebody already have a lot of training that they go through, you know, 8 weeks, 10 weeks, 12 weeks, 16, 20 weeks. I mean, there's a lot of variation between that, but everybody wants to try to get their firefighters trained up and get them on the engine as fast as they can because that's where they're most productive. But I always thought there'd be a lot of value in taking 2 hours or 3 hours, whatever. I don't know how long it would take exactly, but kind of talk about the history of the department and what things have changed and why the firefighters are proud of the department. I mean, there's a reason why if you have a 20-year firefighter who's proud of the Fargo Fire Department or Moorhead Fire Department or wherever it is that you're from, the reason they're proud is because they've seen things happen in those 20 years that made them proud. Convey those to those new firefighters so that they can start building on what has already happened instead of basically starting from scratch and building their own over 20 years. Give them, you know, in Fargo's case, what, 140 years or whatever of tradition that, and so they can build on that a little bit.
And then even starts to teach them the process too, because you could tie in the process to a lot of that. When you go through those changes and show them where it's been and where it is now, it is pretty amazing. I know we always do the, you know, 100 years of
tradition, 100 years
by progress,
kind
of deal. And no, that isn't true. We have made a lot of progress in a lot of ways. We're almost night and day different than we were even 50 years ago.
Yeah.
But just like Jeff said, be proud of those changes, promote those changes, and like Dane's saying, introduce that so we can teach our new personnel about that. So then even as a new personnel, that they might not have quite the level of appreciation, but they have an understanding and they can appreciate it some because they know what came before.
Right. Those companies that are both successful and exciting at the same time are those who have a clear handle on what their corporate identity is. And their workforce knows that. It's, you know, you can say what you want, or whether they're cult-like or what have you, but that they have regular meetings to motivate employees around what makes their organization great to their customers as well as to their employees. And that's a part of the work process, is to make sure everybody stays tied into their identity internally and externally as well as a motivating factor. And yeah, we're really touchy and feely, so we do that all the time in the fire service end, right? We might talk about it over beers.
But it is funny, though, because that's something I know we discuss with our new personnel is, what are the Fargo Fire Department mission? What's the mission? And what are our values? So that they understand that. And I know I speak with my officers especially and go, use this when you're making decisions, because most of our decisions are not black and white. And in the past, we've liked them to be black and white because it's easier. Because then you're not really making a decision. It's already been made for you. And that's where we write these SOGs and these policies, and they get so thick that you can't even know them all. But it's comforting, but it's not helpful in the real situation. And so in the real situation, when you're not sure what to do, then you go through our values. And if that supports our values, then that's the right decision. Mm-hmm. And if it backfires, we still can, then we can back you. We can back you on that and go, no, this is why the decision was made, is because with the information they had at the time, which again, is something Dane and I have talked about, written about a lot, is the environment we make decisions in is not the office environment. We don't have all the information. We are in a hurry. It's very time critical. It's dark. It's noisy. It's loud. So you have to gather as much information as you can very quickly and make your decisions based on that. You don't have time to research it. You don't have time. Well, give me a week and I'll get back to you. I'll call a few of my friends and see what they say.
Get a focus group.
And I don't mean to say that doesn't mean even on an emergency scene, you can't gather information from bystanders and your own personnel to gain situational awareness. You just have to do it quicker and you can't do it as in depth. But that's all a part of it too.
Well, I think along those lines, when someone does make a decision and it does follow your values, even if it doesn't turn out the way they expected it to, you still have to support them. And that shows them that they can make their, they are allowed, I'm making air quotes again, but they're allowed to make those decisions. And even though it may not work out quite the way they expected to, if it was done for the right reasons, then it's okay to make mistakes. Let them make a mistake and learn from it. And hopefully nobody gets hurt, obviously, which can happen in our line of work. But
when you're in a service industry that deals with people, everything is gray. I'm sorry. It's shades of gray.
You're right.
It is not black and white. As much as we'd like it to be, and as, even myself, as much as I'd love it to be black and white, because then I know the right and wrong decisions every time, that's not the case, and that's not what it is. So just like you're saying, is we have to give them the support to make those decisions, and then when they make them, some are going to end badly. But if they did it for the right reasons with the information they had at the time, then you can support that. We can support them and go, this is why, and they can support themselves too that way. But it's interesting too to see there's a process to that too to get them to where they're actually comfortable making those decisions.
Yeah.
And it takes practice and support and encouragement.
He's stretching my back, standing up instead of sitting on the chair.
I thought we were just doing another Jeff Wallen awkward
moment. Well, it turns into that so easily, so quickly, doesn't it? I was looking for a piece of scratch paper. We tend to write notes back and forth to each other while we're doing the show. And I realized, oh, we don't have anything.
Maybe
going.
We should take the show on the road sometime. Where are we going?
Yeah,
road trip.
We talked about doing the show from the Roadhouse. Or
this is the new Roadhouse.
Yeah.
No, I think, I don't have a lot to add. I think.
I was just going to say, in church, sometimes right as we get close to the end of the service, you start hearing a lot of that kind of stuff. The auto starts getting clicked in the fuses. People are getting the cars warmed up so they're ready when they're heading out of the building.
Yep.
That's actually what I was getting up. I was going to go grab the auto starts.
And that's the awkward silence.
Yeah.
I think we got FDIC coming up. Sooner than later, 4 months away, four almost exactly. So the scholarship, Honeywell scholarship is closed, but hopefully everybody had a chance to apply, and congratulations to those that won the scholarship. That's a heck of a deal. So.
That's a great deal.
Yeah, and if you weren't a winner, go to FDIC anyways, right?
Hey,
not everybody's
going
on a scholarship for crying out loud.
That's right.
Oh, I'm filled with optimism right now. The days are getting longer. You can't tell yet.
Yes, you can.
But
I noticed that.
The days are getting longer.
Sun's
small
up a
increments.
Bit, another minute or two.
Sun stayed up a whole another minute.
Woo!
Makes a difference when it's dark at 4:30.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully we gave a few things to think about and maybe spur some discussion with your own organization. Other than that, if you're in the north part of the country, and even some of the south parts of the country,
yeah.
Stay warm.
Basically, if you're not in Florida
safe.
Or the southwest, stay warm.
Yeah. And other than that.
There you go. And folks in Hawaii, I got nothing for you.
My aunt lives in Hawaii, and she was complaining the other night because it dropped down to 70.
The temperature's too perfect again.
I was texting her, 17 below here, so I don't want to hear about it.
That is funny, but in an area where the temperatures are so constant, a 4-degree drop in temperature is noticeable. Isn't that crazy?
It is.
Yeah, and no, one below felt fine this morning, but there wasn't any wind.
Yeah.
Again, that's ridiculous.
Anyways.
Good night from Tailboard Talk.
Thanks for joining us.
Good day.